Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Kathy Martinez, Assistant Secretary of Labor for Disability Employment Policy within the U.S. Department of Labor. And joining us from IBM is Francis West. Hey, Kathy, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can give us a better sense of what constitutes being disabled. And what I mean by that is, how does the federal government define disability?
That is a very interesting question, and it is, in many ways, it's something we're grappling with. The federal government defines disability in different ways depending on the context. So for the purposes of disability non-discrimination laws, such as the Americans with Disabilities Act in Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act, the definition is someone who has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activity. Somebody who has a record of such an impairment. So if you have a record of cancer, if you have a record of mental illness, or somebody who's regarded as having such an impairment. So let's say you're somebody that may not have a disability that limits your functional abilities, but you have like a giant burn mark or facial scar. And so you might not really be physically or mentally or developmentally disabled, but because of your appearance, you're, quote, regarded as having a disability. So that's the definition that underpins our work in ODEP. For purposes of the Social Security disability benefits system, it's a severe disability or combination of disabilities that has lasted or is expected to last at least 12 months. So it's very interesting because the first job that I ever got laid off from, I got a letter from Social Security saying, we understand that you have a disability. And I was thinking, well, I've had a disability. So another group, which is our Voc Rehab, they define disability as a physical or mental impairment that constitutes or results in a substantial impediment to employment. So part of our problem, in my humble opinion, is that, you know, these definitions, some of them are very old. So basically, you know, if under Social Security, it says, if you have a disability, you can't work. Well, I have a disability and I'm working. And so I think as people age and more people get on benefits, you know, it's really going to tax the system, so to speak. And we're going to have to possibly look at these definitions. Some of them are based in how people viewed people with disabilities in like the 50s. But we at ODEP primarily utilize the definition that was developed for the Americans with Disabilities Act.
ADA. So I'd like to get a better sense of the strategic goals of your office. And what are the federal government's disability employment policy priorities?
Well, for ODEP, we have a mantra that guides our policy work. So it's access, expectations, and data, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like four priorities that map back to those themes. The first is access. So we're talking about, in particular, increasing access to training and employment for people with disabilities. And that's kind of the ultimate bottom line after all, right? We all need some kind of training and employment. Second is increasing access to employment supports for people with disabilities, such as, let's say, technology or transportation, and let's say accommodations, and all the other things that we all need to do our jobs every day. Then we have previously discussed expectations, and by that we mean elevating the expectations and creating positive perceptions about the skills and talents of folks with disabilities, especially young people with disabilities. And finally, data. Our fourth priority area is ensuring the availability of credible, consistent data about disability and employment. And I think, you know, those are really kind of those are what underpin our work and really guide our mission and our performance.
So ODEP has worked really hard and steadfastly to address the persistent barriers to employment for people with disabilities. Would you highlight for us some of the persistent barriers and how your office seeks to reduce these barriers?
Well, I think we talked earlier about, you know, the biggest barrier by far is still attitude and fear Well, there's an expression, we fear less what we know best, right? Mm-hmm. So if we grow up with people with disabilities, like the folks that were in my elementary school, I know that many of them have hired people with disabilities, or at least blind people, because they were around us. You know, they got all their millions of questions out in kindergarten. You know, things that adults really want to know, but kids only have the courage to ask, like how you find the bathroom in the dark. It's one of my favorites. So I think, you know, raising these expectations is essential to increasing access to opportunities for employment. And I think also just understanding the concept that, you know, if technology is accessible, that it can make employment so much easier for everybody, and for us folks with disabilities, but for everybody. And the concept that everybody is accommodated at work. We don't necessarily call them accommodations, except for if you're a person with a disability. But, you know, we're all accommodated. You know, we come in assuming there'll be chairs at our desks. We come in assuming we'll each have a computer. We come in assuming there'll be lights on and that, you know, you'll have a phone and a BlackBerry and sometimes a laptop. And so I think we have to kind of realize that we're all being accommodated at work in some way or another, and that accommodations don't just apply to people with disabilities. So, and I think just, you know, the more we're around people with disabilities, the less barriers we'll have, because we just will see disability as a natural part of the human condition, and we will realize that because we're all living longer, we will experience disability in some way or another. And just, I think just being around people with disabilities really reduces the barrier. A lot of it is just, you know, plain old working together on a team and seeing how much somebody can contribute. And I don't want to use the word exposure because it kind of sounds like it's a disease, but there's another expression that I remember hearing. And that is that attitude is caught, not taught, right? So an example would be when I was growing up, my brothers and sisters would have friends that would come over to the house. We always had a lot of people in our house. So they would kind of hang back and watch how my brothers and sisters treated me and Peggy. And once they saw that, you know, that my brothers and sisters teased us and kind of treated us like they would everybody else and, you know, tortured us like they tortured everybody else. You know, those friends did the same thing. So they sort of caught the attitude, you know, by watching and seeing that it was okay to, you know, to have fun with us. And we were able to laugh and we did have a sense of humor. And you know, they played tricks on us all the time, but we play tricks on them too. So it was a pretty equal deal. And I think that, you know, those friends, again, I think they're, you know, the disability was just sort of a normal part of their existence.
So it's very clear that you feel that the expectation or the conversation should really shift from the people with disability can work or not to how they can succeed in, you know, in working and how they can actually contribute to the workplaces. So how would you suggest that we shift the conversation to from whether they can work to whether they can succeed and do actually very well in work?
Okay, I have one idea, and that's that I think we have to stop talking and start doing or start showing. We have to change the tone and our approach, and I think ODEP has really tried to do that because we know what the problem is. And I think there is a benefit to identifying the problem. But once we do that, you know, we have to work on the solution. And I think we have to say not just why, but how. How to recruit, how to develop accessible online systems, how to return someone to work after they become injured or ill. You know, a lot of employers are really afraid to make mistakes. And part of how we learn is by making mistakes. So, you know, each time we develop new and better policies, like Section 503 and the President's Executive Order, I think they really help more people with disabilities. get employed. And people ask, and Francis has heard me say this many times, but they say, you know, give us your best training program about hiring a person with a disability. And the answer is hire a person with a disability. Just like any minority group, you know, there's myths, fears, and stereotype. We rely heavily on partners to, you know, to really help us pave the way. We don't have all the answers. And I think it's fair to say that we shouldn't have all the answers, because so much innovation comes from the private sector, and IBM's been a real champion.
So, Kathy, could you tell us more about the Disability Employment Initiative and how you're working with other folks, colleagues in Department of Labor to make it a reality?
We work very closely with the folks at Employment and Training Administration. We co-fund the Disability Initiative. We also helped write the solicitation for grant applications, which reflect the goals of both agencies. Our goal is really to, you know, change our workforce system and improve the capability of our state workforce systems to work with folks with disabilities so that we don't have to go to, quote, special services. Mm-hmm. And we focus on the underemployed and folks who are unemployed and who aren't SSI. And again, this is a very partnership-based program. The workforce system, you know, works with lots of different state agencies, the Department of Rehab. The whole idea is, you know, we want to reduce silos. We want to focus on youth. You know, we want youth to believe by providing role models and opportunities that they can work. And, you know, not like folks like me, who I didn't really meet a blind person that worked until I was pretty old. And I didn't meet a blind person who worked outside of the blindness field until I was probably in my 20s. Mm. So, you know, I didn't feel like I had a role model. I especially didn't meet a non-white blind person, or especially didn't meet a non-white gay blind person. So it's important to have role models out there, and this is where the private sector can play a huge role.
Well, could you tell us, Kathy, more about the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act? How does it benefit individuals with disabilities?
Okay, so the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, I think the main word there is opportunity. And it was signed by President in the last Congress. It was just passed. I think it was signed in July of 2014. And the name says it's all. It's really about opportunity and finding innovative ways to increase the opportunity for American job seekers. The WIOA, or Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, helps job seekers, including folks with disabilities, access the services that they need to succeed in employment. One of the things that I think is so interesting about this bill is that it does really focus on the concept of expectation, and that folks with disabilities should be funneled into competitive integrated employment opportunities. And that includes people with the most significant disabilities. I mean, typically, I think we've kind of funneled and been comfortable funneling people with very significant disabilities into subminimum wage work or sheltered work, as we call it. And I think the idea now is to presume from the outset that somebody can work in an integrated setting and that somebody can earn minimum wage or prevailing wage. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important to me and to ODEP that, you know, and the Department of Ed, because this is a joint regulation, you know, that we start seeing disability or people with significant disabilities in a different light, that we presume first that folks with significant disabilities can work in competitive integrated employment.
Well, Kathy, this year marks the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act, ADA. What are you doing to celebrate the milestones?
Well, there's a lot being planned. This is a proud moment for our community. I can't believe it's already 25 years, given that I've been involved. I was involved in the first go around in 1990. We haven't planned anything specific yet. We haven't solidified our official event, but I know that there's a larger plan, nationwide plan, and certainly whatever we do will fit into that plan. And I'm sure there will be a lot of government-wide recognition involving the White House and other agencies. There's lots of celebrations across the country, including a bus that's going around, and you know, lots of briefs are being prepared. There's something called the ADA Legacy Project. There's going to be a myriad of events in Washington during the week of, I think it's July 26th. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm right. Mm-hmm. So it's a momentous time for us, but I think we have to remember that there's still a lot to do, and there's still a lot of people with disabilities that are capable of working that are out of the workforce. And it will give us, you know, an opportunity to shine the light on all we've done and all that we need to get done.
So, Kathy, I know your office focuses on policy, but I'm wondering, do you offer technical assistance and specific training support to employers that are looking to make their workforce and workplace inclusive?
We do. We have quite a few grants that we offer. These grants are critical. I can give you some examples. One of the examples is our Job Accommodation Network. Job Accommodation Network is one of the main links to employers with regard to providing accommodations. Mm-hmm. We have our Employer Technical Assistance Center. It's there to assist any and all employers with recruiting, hiring, retaining, and advancing qualified folks with disabilities. It has both research and a technical assistance arm. Mm-hmm. And basically, we do some analysis with regard to policies that work, policies and practices that are recommended to us by employers. You know, we have to test them, see if they work. We work with federal agencies a lot. We have something called eFedLink, which is it's an online community of practice for HR diversity and inclusion professionals and others in the federal government. It allows peer-to-peer interaction and input, which is really important. So if I'm an HR director or manager and I have a question about, you know, how did you accommodate X, Y, and Z, I can ask another HR director. And very often I think people value the opinion of their peers rather than somebody like ODEP, you know, telling them what to do. You know, our job is really to engage all sectors so that other folks have the information about how to accommodate folks with disability. I mean, it's not, you know, some secret that we want to keep. It's something that we want to share. So eFedLink has about 900 participants of HR professionals all over the government that share information all the time. It's really one of our biggest successes.
How is technology creating new employment opportunities for people with disabilities? We will ask Kathy Martinez, Assistant Secretary of Labor for Disability Employment Policy, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.